welcome everyone to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Shore, and joining me as always is Jake Barnett. We are here for your WWE SmackDown audio review for the SmackDown that aired September the 21st, 2012. Jake and I get together just about every weekend and do an audio review of SmackDown. Missed last weekend because I was out of town for Chikara's King of Trios. But it's our general rule, we're here every weekend to let you guys know what happened on SmackDown and give our thoughts on it for the week. But it's not the only audio that's produced here on the site each week. We do one for every one of the major shows. Jason Powell does a WWE Raw audio review. Will Pruitt, and sometimes, including this week, Ryan Kester joins him for the TNA Impact Wrestling Review. Jake and Will get together every Wednesday, usually, for the .NET Countdown, where they look at the top and the bottom of professional wrestling each and every week. Jason does a Q&A audio where members can ask both wrestling and non-wrestling questions from him. I have been doing a string of interviews over the past few weeks. There's a lot of them up right now. The Young Bucks, Steve Corino, Ring of Honor World Champion Kevin Steen, all available. Got more stuff lined up coming over the next few weeks. And then Jason and I get together every Thursday for our flagship audio show. We call it .NET Weekly. We review all the major news of the week, often break news that's not made its way to the site. And that is available each and every week, but almost all of those audios are exclusive to our members. So if you want access to all of those audios, plus all the old interviews that's been done, there's interviews on the site with Chris Jericho, different former creative team members, just all kinds of interviews there for you guys. Plus get access to the ad-free version of the site and access to the .NET member forum and the .NET member blog section. All you got to do is become a .NET member. Head on over to ProWrestling.net. Click on the right-hand side of the page where it says .NET member sign up. It'll run you through all the advantages of being a .NET member, and then it'll give you the link to get you started. $7.50 if you want to take the 30-day option, but if you know you want to be a member for a year, take that annual option, and we will knock $2 a month off each and every month. Take you $24 over the course of the year. It's a good time to be a .NET member. Again, all those interviews, I've got more coming up next week. Don't want to name drop, but a former WWE diva is in the works for next week. That is my hope, and we will see how that plays out. But it's a good time to be a member, and it's a good time to be watching SmackDown this past week, Jake. It was not a show that did a lot in the sense of storylines from top and bottom of the card, but one storyline was the focus. In fact, it's probably not even fair to call it SmackDown this week. It's probably better to call it the Kane and Daniel Bryan show, correct?
Yeah, I mean, it was really centered around the angle with those two involved, and also, their argument over who in fact was the tag team champions. That appears to be what they're focused on. But I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was a show that was a nice change of pace, and it's nice to see the tag team champions get featured, even though it's technically two singles wrestlers who are former world champions.
Yeah, it was a fun show. It was a bit ridiculous at times. The stuff at the end was totally ridiculous, but it managed to work. Even the beginning was ridiculous with Edge, and we'll talk about him making his return. Are you digging the Kane and Daniel Bryan story? I guess not more so than are you digging it. Do you think it's got legs? I mean, can this hold for a long time, or is this going to get old quick?
You know, I think thus far they've done a pretty good job of keeping it fresh. I don't think them screaming back and forth at each other, with the same insults and the same argument every week will last very long. You know, you can only have so many shouting matches about who is the tag team champions, or, calling each other Goatface, and Brian telling Kane to go back in the basement where he belongs. I mean, they've managed to keep it kind of entertaining and light thus far, and I think both guys, if they were lesser actors and were weren't quite as into their characters, this probably would have failed from the start. But I think it's caught on because both these guys are charismatic, as long as they keep the content fresh, it'll probably have legs. But if they keep repeating themselves, I imagine that it'll crater pretty quickly.
I don't know. The jury is still out on whether or not this is going to be something that works long term. I think it can. I don't know. But it's also got its problems. Like you said, there's if they keep going back to the same well over and over, it's going to get repetitive really fast. But so far, they've managed to turn this act into something hilarious and a lot of fun to watch. I'll ask you this question, not as a a critique necessarily of WWE, but just an opinion of you as a fan. You much more familiar with Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson in the independent, considered by many to be the best active wrestler in the world. Some, you know, go so far as to say he's the best of all times or whatever. But he, I mean, certainly no doubt he was a guy who his in-ring skill is what made him a big deal on the independent scene and ultimately led to his WWE signing. As a fan, does it bother you in any way that, you know, he's gone from being this mat tactician, this unbelievable ring general who can have great matches with just about anybody, to a comedy character that yes, he's over, and yes, he's drawing good money, and all those things are important. That's why I'm saying I'm not trying to bash what he's doing, but just as a fan, does it bother you that we're seeing more of that from him and less of his great in-ring work?
You know, I guess this is all subjective, so maybe it bothers other people a lot more than it does me, but I don't think he would succeed with just having the amazing technical skill that we know he possesses. I mean, he did have a 30-minute pay-per-view WWE title main event with CM Punk just a few months ago. I think it was in July. That was fantastic. So I think we are getting to see, you know, what made, you know, got Daniel Bryan to the dance, as JR would say, his technical skill. But without evolving as a character and without developing, you know, the skills that he has on the microphone, you know, becoming somebody that can connect with the crowd and obviously has some charisma. There aren't few characters in WWE right now that get the kind of reaction that Bryan does. And I think it's a testament to how hard he's worked and how willing he is to, you know, to evolve, as a personality and as a talent. And, I'm glad that he has, because like I said earlier, I don't think, you know, if Bryan had just came into WWE, bent on succeeding just based on his technical skills alone, I don't think he would have reached where he has already.
That's fair. Yeah, it's always a curiosity question for me. Like, you're familiar with him more so on the indie scene than I was. By the time I really started paying attention, he was towards the end of that run, and I think it was just a couple of weeks before he got signed that I first, you know, got a chance to see some of his work on video and whatnot. So it's always interesting to see what other people who are more familiar with him saw. The other big news, of course, on this show, Edge makes his return. Not a return in a permanent sense, just kind of showing up and making an appearance. Certainly it was a plug for his appearance on Haven, which is the show on Sci-Fi that airs right after SmackDown. His hair is cut short. That's been that way for some time, but he looked good. He sounded good, and it's always good to see him back. A guy who, you know, whose career was tragically cut short because of a neck injury, but it was fun to see him back, and once again showing that he is missed. He was great on the mic, and even in a ridiculous opening segment in the grand scheme of things. Was very entertaining here. It was good seeing Edge back.
Yeah, I'm with you there. You know, I it's hard to express how awesome it is to see him, you know, able to retire before he was critically injured and, you know, has serious neck problems that, you know, make it difficult for him to do things. I mean, he seems like he retired. You know, they caught the medical issue early enough, and he retired before it became something that would alter, you know, the way he has to live the rest of his life. So he looks good. You know, he seems like he's in good spirits. He was in good humor. You know, the opening segment was very funny. And, you know, I was just glad to see him back, doing what he looks like he really enjoys doing, which is joking around with his buddies. And it was all, you know, it seemed like in good spirit. And actually the show that he was plugging isn't half bad either, and he's actually been pretty good on it. So I hope he sees some success on television or in movies if he wants that.
Edge, of course, moved 2 hours from where I live. His retirement home is in Asheville, North Carolina, just a couple hours from me. And as I continue to joke, my hope is to bump into him one day with my voice recorder in my pocket so I can get an interview with the Rated R superstar. But let's take this show from start to finish. They took a week off this week, and you know, we kind of talked about how there wasn't a whole lot going on besides for Bryan and Kane, and that's to be expected. There's 6 weeks in between pay-per-views, and any time WWE has more than about 4 weeks in between pay-per-views, they take at least 1 week off. I wouldn't be surprised if they take next week off in the grand scheme of things and not do any type of serious storytelling. But, you know, they had a lot of fun with this. Before we take the show, one last question about Brian and Kane. You know, we've been hearing forever there's going to be this, you know, revival of the tag division. And, you know, we saw more tag teams, but nothing ever really felt, you know, special or important. They just were kind of there. Kofi and Truth were still the tag teams champions. But now that they've dropped them to Brian and Kane, they're doing this really over-the-top act. And as we see at the end, they beat up all the available tag teams that are out there, or at least as of late. Is this the answer, Jake? Is this how they're going to fix the tag team division? Well, it certainly looks like this is the route they're going. Is this the right idea? Do you think it's going to work and will bring legitimacy back to the tag team?
I think it depends on how long Kane and Brian hold the titles. You know, if they have active competition, you know, for a few months that actually involves the teams they plan on having being in the division permanently, then, you know, I think it could do some good. But, you know, like we saw on, you know, on SmackDown, they had Sandow and Rhodes, you know, a team that is not normally in the division, you know, taking them on. And, you know, they managed to physically dismantle, you know, everybody else that was down at ringside for that match, which was basically every other tag team on the SmackDown roster that was available, like you mentioned. So, I don't know. I don't think that helps. I mean, it definitely helps Brian and Kane with their, you know, legitimacy as a team, that now that they, you know, they've managed to unite to actually do some damage. But in the end, it's going to depend on how long they hold the titles, and, you know, if and when they do drop the titles, is, you know, does the other team look legitimate, or is it going to be one of those, you know, another comedy segment where one of them costs the other the match or something? You know, if it's one of those situations, it'll probably be, you know, another Truth and Kofi situation where, you know, they went into the division, didn't do a whole lot with it, and left without much fanfare.
That's fair. I mean, it's kind of the catch-22 of WWE. It's, you know, if when silly stuff is going on, it's kind of like, you know, at first when Daniel Bryan, started doing the silly stuff and people were getting, you know, some fans were getting upset for the reasons we talked about earlier with his, you know, his technical skills and whatnot. And, you know, and our response was, yeah, I see what you're saying, but if he's getting this much attention, that's going to be a good thing. We've seen so many guys kind of go through that comedy segment of their career where then they're, because, you know, they entertained Vince McMahon with this silly stuff for a while, they're suddenly the biggest stars in the world. And, you know, I think that's happening in a lot of ways with Daniel Bryan, and I think they can bring legitimacy. They're a good team, much like, say, Chris Jericho and Big Show were, or Miz and Big Show were. So they work well in that sense. They're the traditional big man, little man tag team, and so there's a lot of good that can come here, but it all depends on how they're used and how much. You know, right now they're telling the story of Daniel Bryan and Kane. If they can find a way to also tell the story of tag teams in WWE at the same time, then I think they have a winner on their hands. If not, we're going to end up with the same tag team division when this is all over that we had when it started. But let's go through the show from start to finish. We'll, again, not a lot of analysis this week on a lot of segments, again, because most of them were just kind of placeholder-type moments and didn't do anything to advance any storylines. So, but we did get Edge straight out of the gate and got a big pop for him from the crowd. You know, part of me is almost a little bit frustrated that they went the route of Lillian Garcia introducing him as Edge instead of just letting his music hit and let that crowd react to it. I mean, they reacted to his name first, and then his music hit. And, yes, they hit big, but, you know, just I think for me as a fan, if I'm in attendance, I don't want to know. I just want to hear "You Think You Know Me" and then just freak out like everybody else does. But just a minor thing, a personal thing, I guess. Edge comes out again, looks very good, starts cutting a promo about, you know, being retired for 18 months, appearing on Haven. You know, he said he didn't know what he was going to do after that. After you know, his neck forced him to retire, but he's found his way to Haven, and you know, and he's doing pretty good. He got but right after that plug for Haven, he said he's been watching WWE and he saw something he had never seen before. They showed the video of Daniel Bryan and Kane hugging in the ring, which of course has been the key to all of this. Yes, Chance started after the video and before he could really get going, he called him Kane and Goat Boy, which, of course, was played on the majority of the night. But before he could really get going more from there, Daniel Bryan's music hits. He comes out to the ring carrying a microphone and his belt of the Tag Team Championships. We get a big yes chance. Brian's trying to stay cool and whatnot. He talks to Edge. He insisted that he said that he's saying they, and he goes, I am the tag team champion. And he didn't really get worked up, but it was just just a real intense promo and whatnot. But also a little bit silly. Edge, just calm down, and he said, how are you keeping this under control? Because he sounds like Brian said he was one with his emotions, and Edge asked if he was kidding. Brian said he could see that that he wasn't kidding. And then Brian starts taking some shots at him. Edge said, excuse me, and Brian goes, it's funny you pointed that out, because have you ever thought about your ex-wife? And it seemed to me that Edge mouthed which one. Is that what I saw?
Yeah, that's what I caught, too.
Yeah, he goes, did you think about your ex-wife? And Edge said, which one? Which, for me, was kind of the funniest moment of the whole opening bit. Brian said that, subconscious thoughts come out in the heat of the moment. He talked to me, he goes, you think about the pain that you and your ex-wife caused each other. He said that maybe Edge should go back into retirement and acting, because obviously, you've had all this trauma in your past. He goes, I'm a Redwood, and there's nothing that any of the people in the crowd could do to make him snap, but there's nothing that Edge could do to make him snap. Edge said, that kind of sounds like a challenge to me, and Brian said, no, it's not, and he goes, yeah, it is, no, yes, no, yes, no, no, and Brian, of course, freaked out, and he's like, oh, this is fun. And Brian's stomping around screaming, no, no, no. Kane's pyro pops. His music hits. He comes to the ring. He got a mic and said they were both wrong. He was the tag team champions. That's got those two in each other's faces, holding the belt up, screaming at each other, I'm the tag team champion, I'm the tag team champion. Edge gets it between them, yells at him to stop, and Kane, in probably the best moment, this was just great. Kane just turns with him and goes, Edge, you seem angry. And Brian's like, yeah, you do. Like, maybe you should go in the back and meet the doctor and calm down. And Edge is just is selling it great. He seems very frustrated. He's like, I get it. I get why Brian would be one with himself and all this stuff. He's the vegan. I get it. He goes, but you're not the big red, Barney the big red dinosaur. You're the big red machine. We've done terrible things to each other. I stole your wife, and then you broke up my wedding with your wife by tombstoning the priest, and then I tortured your father, and we've done terrible things to each other, and what about that? And Kane says, you're right, you have done terrible things to me, and I feel like there's something I should do about it right now. And just he's standing there looking imposing. Edge takes off his jacket, acts like he's ready to fight if necessary. Kane puts his arms out like he's going to hug, and he waves Edge forward. Edge is just kind of standing there confused. He took a small step forward and another step forward, and then Kane reaches out, just grabs him, pulls him in, hugs him real close. Edge kind of pats him on the back a little bit too. Daniel Bryan completely craps the bed, starts stomping around, yelling, no, 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 no. At that point, Edge stops hugging Kane, but they keep one arm around each other, and Edge goes, Daniel. And he stops and he looks. They both hold their arms out as if they're going to do a group hug. Daniel Bryan's face sold the moment better than anything else he could have done. Just the look on his face, the pure, really, I get to be involved in the hug too, was fantastic. He starts heading that way to do the hug, but before he can get there, Damian Sandow's music hits, and the guy draws more heat than he ever has in his entire life. He comes out and using all of his big words, basically says that he's tired of watching these two idiots come out there and do all the hugging when, instead of being real competitors or whatever. Edge says, if you have a problem with it, perhaps you should face one of them. Sandow tries to beg off and says that no, he's a man of thinking, not a man of physical attacks. He gets the crowd going. Edge gets the crowd going. Should he face Daniel Bryan? Should he face Kane? The people chant no for Daniel Bryan, yes for Kane. Kane and Daniel Bryan, face off against each other, and the show goes to commercial in the middle of all that. So I've spoken a whole lot recapping all that. I'll let you take the first shot at it. Did you like what happened here? And did you like the cut? Did you think the cut made sense?
I actually did really like the segment. It was one of the better humored segments that WWE has put together, in quite some time. And I think a lot of it has to do you know, with you know, how good of friends Edge and Kane are, and how good Daniel Bryan has been, you know, in this character. You know, they genuinely seem to be out there having a good time together, and it showed, and that was a lot of fun. And the group hug, like you mentioned, you know, the Bryan's facial expression was perfect, and Kane, you know, you can't really discount his role, you know, in the whole thing. He's been extremely good at delivering, you know, the dry humor in the middle of the segments when it's been needed. You mentioned him, you know, asking, telling Edge that he seemed angry, which was perfect, because he basically did an about face right after, you know, he was in a screaming match with Bryan, and delivered that line extremely calmly, which was very good. The cut, I wasn't really a fan of it because it just seemed awkward. They were in the middle of another shouting match. They came back to commercial, and then we joined a match in progress. So it just seemed disjointed in a way.
Yeah, we got the match. The bell actually rung right at the top. Went back and looked again just to make sure, because I felt the same thing too. But we did get the bell right at the start, but you didn't have any indication of who it was going to be, or even if there was going to be a match, and there was no logic into how the match was booked. It's not like Booker T or somebody came out and went, oh, no, we're going to book this match. It's almost like Edge booked it, which seemed bizarre. And it was the last we saw of Edge either. We didn't get a real goodbye of him. So I didn't like the cut either. I did like the segment. I thought it entertained me at least. And it also, as it played out, it's kind of one of those things where it's like when it happens, you're like, okay, that was fun, but why? And then by the end of the show, when you see how everything's kind of plugged in together, it made sense what they were doing. I think in retrospect, I liked it more than I did just sitting watching the first time. Though there were moments that were absolutely hysterical. I was laughing out loud a couple of times. Bryan's face, Kane, you know, like I said, delivering the really dry line, Edge, you seem angry, was just fantastic. And more than anything else, it made me go, God, I wish I could just hang out with Kane, Glenn Jacobs, just one time, because he seems like he's a total riot. And he's a very smart guy. But we did get that match immediately after after the commercial break. It was Damian Sandow defeating Kane in 3 minutes and 12 seconds in our first match. You know, it was all Kane, all domination. Daniel Bryan sitting at ringside. Finally, he grabs both belts, starts screaming, I am the tag team champion, gets up on the apron. He and Kane get into another shouting match, which allows Sandow to attack Kane from behind and to hit his neck breaker finisher for the win. Bryan laughs, walks up the ramp with both belts, laughing at Kane the entire time, giving Sandow the win. You know, it's a mostly meaningless win in the sense of putting any real heat on Sandow, but just the fact that he's involved with this, he's been involved with the DX thing, I mean, it's pretty clear they got high hopes for this guy, don't they?
It sure seems like it. Yeah, he's been put in... You know, he's been put in a position to succeed, and I guess, you know, I think you've said this a number of times, you know, and I agree with you that positioning, you know, it's a huge component in how you're perceived and what opportunities you get, and they're positioning him in a way where, you know, you'd have to screw up pretty bad, you know, to miss this opportunity, and so far he's delivered when he's been given a chance. So, yeah, he's on his way to good things.
Yeah, and I think you made the perfect point there, that he's delivered. They've put him in these situations, and he's come out and he's cut a money promo every time. I mean, granted, it's not the greatest thing when I say, you know, money promo. It's not like, oh, God, damn it. But he's done what he was supposed to do. He has been more than effective. He has delivered perfectly every time. And I got high hopes for the kid. I like his gimmick. We've talked about that many times in the past. We get to see Colin Matthews at that point. They put over the partnership with Susan G. Komen and they talked about the ring ropes and everything else, got a commercial for the group. After commercial, Daniel Bryan's backstage tearing stuff up, demanding, you know, asking people, where's Daniel Bryan? He runs into Dr. Shelby and said that if he didn't get an apology from Daniel Bryan for what happened, he would rip the beard off of his goat face. Bryan, at that point, pops out of one of the packing boxes that was behind Dr. Shelby, like he's hiding in this box. And he just pops up like a jack-in-the-box and says, I do not have a goat face. And then the argument breaks out. Dr. Shelby freaks out, gets them to finally calm down. They trade apologies. Bryan gave him his title back. Kane said, but that doesn't change the fact that Daniel Bryan cost me the match. Shelby said, can I talk to Booker and see if, you know, putting Bryan in a match would work? Would that be okay? Kane said, yes, that would make him feel better. And then he said, I am the tag team champion, and ran away real fast before Brian could say anything. Brian started to speak, but Shelby stopped him. More of the same stuff from these guys. We're going, you know, stop me if there's anything you want to jump in and say, Jake, but I think we'll kind of push through these because it's just more of the same. And it wasn't bad. It's just more of the same, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I guess if I was going to, I mean, for people who haven't watched the show and listened to the recap audio, I mean, if you wanted to place it somewhere, if you've ever seen the movie Step Brothers, it's almost like that kind of relationship between Brian and Kane. And thus far, they've been able to pull it off. But it does feel like they're borrowing from that love-hate relationship kind of dynamic quite a bit.
And you know, and the announce team went out of their way to kind of point that out, too. They said they were like Step Brothers. They were like brothers and that, you know, they can do whatever to each other, but when people come in from the outside, it changes everything, which we'll see how that plays out later. But you mentioned that now. The announce team was doing it as well. At that point, we get the video about the bro kick, controversy, whether it should have been banned or not, and how it played out at the pay-per-view. They cut backstage then to Del Rio, who's sitting in Booker's office and looking at his book, at Booker's book. Booker comes in and says, what are you doing here? Del Rio calls him a coward and asks him what he was thinking reinstating the bro kick. He says that it wasn't fair that he did it right before the match. He was not prepared for that. As far as he knew, the bro kick was going to be illegal or banned, and, you know, he couldn't prepare for it not, you know, he prepared for it not being there, and then Booker at the last second said, you know, change the rules on him, and that wasn't fair. Booker said, you know what, it probably wasn't fair, so you're going to do the right thing, give me another title shot. He's like, no, you still got to earn it around here, son, and so I'll put you in a match, and he booked the tag match for later with Del Rio and Ziggler versus Sheamus and Randy Orton for later in the show, which did not make Del Rio happy. And then Eve makes her entrance before the commercial break. Not great stuff from Del Rio. Booker T, not terrible stuff either. They, again, kind of a holding pattern thing. And, you know, anytime you get a tag match like that, just like we did on Monday Night on Raw with the tag match, they continue to tell the story with Cena and Punk, but there was, you know, it's just kind of holding for other things. It's like, okay, we'll just remind people that they still have this feud and then move on from there. After commercial, we get our second match of the night. It was Layla defeating Natalya. You don't have a time here. It was about, I don't know, 2.5 minutes, something like that. Layla won with the layout neck breaker. But kept staring at Eve. Eve was on commentary. She was okay on commentary. Was saying that Layla should pay attention. They continued the whole idea that Layla thinks there was shenanigans involved or whatever. You know, I was happy on the front of this, even though I didn't necessarily like how it played out, that at least we had a story in the Divas division. But now the story just seems to be getting weak. They didn't do a real good job of delivering anything here.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like the match existed solely so Cole and Matthews could quiz Eve about, you know, what happened at the pay-per-view with the attack on Caitlyn by the masked, you know, attacker and whatnot. So, I didn't really get much from the match. It just kind of felt like it was happening while they were going through what they kind of wanted to draw attention to, which was Eve and the circumstances around Caitlyn's injury. So, there wasn't a whole lot to talk about. I mean, it was a confidently wrestled match, but this wasn't about the match at all.
And after commercial, we went into our the top of the hour sort of thing. I mean, the top of the hour came in the middle of the match, but it was, you know, that's the big moment leading up to our third match. Sheamus and Randy Orton defeating Dolph Ziggler and Alberto Del Rio in 8 minutes and 9 seconds. I had hoped that what they were going to do here was get some tension between Sheamus and Orton, because I do think those two were going to face each other at WrestleMania. I think that's where they're going with it, and I thought they might start planting the seeds here. Nothing jumped out at me. I will admit, because I was at the TNA live event last night, I had to watch this on delay, and with so much going on, I watched it a little bit on fast forward. I skipped ahead for a minute, so nothing jumped out at me. So let me know if I missed something between those two. But otherwise, this seemed to be a pretty straightforward, you know, heel versus babyface tag team match. At the, you know, the finish on it comes with Del Rio going for the cross arm breaker on Sheamus. Sheamus shoves him off, Orton hits an RKO, turns around, hits the bro kick on Ziggler, who had the briefcase and was going to hit somebody with it, and then Sheamus covered Ziggler for the pinfall victory. He and Orton celebrated together after the match. You know, it was a good match. All four of these guys can wrestle their asses off, but, you know, Sheamus and, or excuse me, Del Rio and Ziggler have just, you know, continue to be marginalized. Ziggler gets little spurts. Same with Del Rio. You get this moment here, a moment there where they get something big, but nothing indecisive, but nothing substantial, nothing long-term, nothing sustaining them as top heels. Sheamus and Orton are just way over. You knew they were going to win, and, you know, it was well-wrestled, but when it was over, it was more of a, for me, than it was anything else. How about you?
Yeah, that's really the impression I got. The match was fine, and it was well-wrestled, and, you know, like you mentioned, all these guys can work their asses off, and that's never really been the problem in any of these feuds. The action is always held up at the end of the deal. I just could not care less about what they're doing with Sheamus and Del Rio at this point. I think Del Rio has been emasculated for the umpteenth time, on pay-per-view numerous times and on television numerous times. You know, Ziggler, I don't know if they know exactly what their plan is for him with that briefcase yet. You know, it sure seems like they want to put him in feuds with major talents, but he really hasn't shown the ability to actually beat anyone soundly without the assistance of Vicky or distractions or some kind of heel tactic. So I keep waiting for him to have a clean victory that signals that, you know, they're going to move him into, a title victory or even some of the more traditional Money in the Bank gimmicks. I mean, you know, they had Bryan lose repeatedly until he finally, you know, snuck one out. And, they really haven't even been sending him Ziggler in that direction either. He's just kind of been treading water, and that's kind of been disappointing. So I hope they develop a plan and put it into place pretty quickly here, because I haven't lost interest in Ziggler or the briefcase, but it sure seems like they should be doing more with it at this point.
Yeah, I haven't lost interest in Ziggler, but I have lost interest in the briefcase. Like, I don't care all that much that he's got the briefcase. It's not doing anything for him. They're not really using it to their advantage, at least not yet. Yeah, there may be a plan. There may not be. But, you know, right now it's like, oh, he's walking around with the briefcase. It's more like a gimmick to me now than anything else. It's almost like winning King of the Ring and walking around with the crown. It really doesn't mean anything. It's just a gimmick to help try to get you heat. I just don't know that it's working for the kid right now. I think people like Ziggler. We're hearing a lot of cheers for him. They may have to turn him babyface ultimately once they put the title on him, because I think people want to cheer him because they appreciate the work that he does. I mean, the guy is unbelievable in the ring when it comes to selling. And, you know, so it's just a weird time for Dolph Ziggler right now. And I want to see a title run with him. I want to see what he can do. I think because of his ability to sell in the ring, and with Vicky Guerrero there to be a distraction, I think he could be the guy who is good. You know, we complain about the chicken shit heels, but I think he's the guy that's meant to be the chicken shit heel. You know, he's the guy that comes out there, makes the guys in the ring look like $1 million and escape at the last second, a lot like Ric Flair did for a decade or more in the NWA and WCW. So, I really think that Ziggler is that guy, and I'd like to see if I'm right or not. I may be wrong. I may be horribly wrong, but I wish they would pull the trigger, put the title on him, and see if I'm right, because right now Sheamus is not compelling as the champion, and his main competitor, Del Rio, is not compelling at all for all the reasons that you mentioned. Next commercial, Daniel Bryan's in the ring. Cody Rhodes makes his entrance. And maybe it's just because I'm looking forward to October 30th and the release of the third one, but is it just me, or does Cody Rhodes' his ring gear continue to cut? Not just his in-ring gear, but his entrance gear. It's almost like he's channeling Assassin's Creed with the way that hood comes down over his face.
Yeah, that or AJ Styles, one of the two. Yeah. Maybe a combination of both, I don't know. But yeah, it does seem like he's emulating AJ or Assassin's Creed. That's a good one. It looks pretty similar. I mean, obviously he doesn't have the full robes on or anything, but he definitely looks like he's trying to get some kind of mysterious look going.
Yeah, the hood just comes down to a point, it looked like to me, and that's what jumped out to me. Of course, I'm a mark for that game, so it might be what it is, too. I'm just waiting my last month for the new one to come out. And by the way, if anything major in wrestling happens on October 30th, look to Jason. I'm not going to be covering. I'll be playing the game. But that led to our fourth match of the night, Cody Rhodes defeating Daniel Bryan at 2 minutes and 11 seconds. Not Kane, like you've got in your report. But it was Daniel Bryan taking the loss 2 minutes. Both guys got in some early offense. Bryan goes for the no lock pretty quickly. He starts to hook it on. Kane's pyro pops. He comes out on the stage, does his hand gesture, which causes the pyro in the ring to pop. Bryan breaks the hold, jumps up. And he never really had it locked in, but he had the arm twisted around, so he just completely steps away from Cody, goes to the ring, to the rope, starts yelling at Kane at the top of the ramp, which allows Cody to grab him from behind and hit Crossroads for the victory. Kane standing at the top of the ramp laughing as Brian's standing there with his neck. You know, you could see this coming from a mile away, couldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, it was fairly obvious from the start of the match and the way it got booked that this is where they were going. And I mean, it didn't upset me or anything that it happened. You know, so obviously, I think this is one of those times when it was kind of one of the. It was a good way to be obvious, just because it made sense given the story they were trying to tell.
Yeah, as Jason and I talked about before, sometimes transparent is not bad, and then this is kind of one of those cases where it's like, gee, I wonder how this is going to play out, and that's okay, because it continued to tell the story, and it set up well for later in the show as well. After commercial, we get Daniel Bryan backstage, Patty Kane asking him what happened. They argue for a while. They go back to the goat face. Brian said something about he needs to go, that Kane needs to go back to the basement with his shiny hair and all of this stuff and be there. And Kane said he belonged in a petting zoo. And Brian said, well, you belong in the basement petting zoo. And just ridiculous arguments going back and forth. They stop and they see Cody Rhodes and Damian Sandow standing behind them. Brian asked them what they were looking at, and Rhodes said that they were a joke as a team, and there's just no way they were going to be able to continue. Sandow jumped in and said, in $5 words, that that the tag team was going to explode at some point or implode at some point. Brian says, "Do you want to see what can happen? How about us face you two in the ring?" And kind of, you know, at that point they kind of made their peace and. We're standing there side by side. Rhodes and Sandow walk off in opposite directions, which led to another argument where Kane and Daniel Bryan argued over which one they were more scared of. Bryan goes, "I think they're scared of me." Kane says, "No, they're scared of me." And they bickered into Michael Cole and Josh Matthews introducing the Raw Rebound video, which just recaps Cena and Punk. We talked about it on .NET Weekly. Anything you want to add about Cena and Punk or even Bryan and Kane backstage?
Yeah, I think you guys covered it well enough on .NET Weekly. But the Kane and Bryan stuff, I thought it was more of the same. You know, that's kind of the reason I hope they put a little more effort into coming up with the more backstage stuff for them, just because it seems like they're going to the well quite a bit. And maybe if you're trying to get across the fact that they're a little mentally unstable, that's okay. But it seems like WWE has a lot of talent repeating themselves on television quite a bit recently.
Yeah, I did appreciate the whole go back to the basement with your shiny hair moment. That was probably the line of the whole segment. But other than that, like I said, and it wasn't bad. I want people to understand when we say it was more the same. It wasn't necessarily bad, but it's like, yeah, that's pretty much so what played out earlier in the show, and that's what played out earlier than that, and that's what played out earlier than that. So it's just kind of transparent, and right now that's okay, but over time, it will get to a point where you're like, oh, look, it's more of shiny hair and goat face. And so it's working now, like as we've talked about this whole time. They need to just be aware of that, keep that fresh, not let that get stale. Brodus Clay makes his entrance with the Funkadactyls, both of them, before the commercial break. And afterwards, our fifth match of the night, Brodus Clay defeating Heath Slater at 1:34 by disqualification. After, Brodus hit his big, his kind of throwaway slam, suplex, whatever you want to call it, where he normally sits up for his splat splash. And he turns around to go after Slater, and out of nowhere, Drew McIntyre, who... You know, color me surprised. I didn't know he was still on the damn roster. And Jinder Mahal come out and attack Clay, and the three of them beat him down and celebrate together. You wrote in your report, is this the new job squad? I don't know. What the hell was this? What, Drew McIntyre? I thought the guy was dead.
Yeah, I actually got an email after the show telling me that Drew McIntyre and Jinder Mahal had been having interactions with Slater on NXT and Superstars, and that they had kind of made, they hadn't really gave away what was going to happen, but they had made inklings that they were going to try to join forces, and apparently Clay was their first victim, but they still didn't say anything. They haven't announced their intentions or whether they plan on permanently, you know, joining forces or what this is. I really don't know, but I apparently generally don't keep up with what happens on Superstars because normally it's inconsequential. But they had made some kind of inklings toward this with matches on that show. But I still don't know what it is. I have no idea what to expect. I was with you until I had gotten that email about 10 minutes after the show. I saw Drew McIntyre had been sent home. I mean, I had no idea he was still around. So, I mean, I'm kind of glad actually that he's still there because I think he has talent, and I hope they find things to do for the lower end of the card, you know, because it seems like that the lower end of the card and the mid card generally get they don't get much attention storyline wise. So it's actually kind of refreshing to see them actually get some effort put into them.
Would you be okay with a revamp of the Job Squad? Not exactly like the group was back in the Attitude Era, but if their argument here, these three guys were, Drew, I've not been on television. You've got Jinder Mahal, who just got killed by Ryback. You got Heath Slater, who was being killed by Brodus Clay. I mean, would that be a storyline that interests you to have these guys come out and say we're tired of getting screwed over and so we've banded together to keep us from getting screwed over?
Yeah, I mean, most of these successful factions, especially the heel ones, kind of start with guys angry that they're getting overlooked. And I can see that happening here, and I think it could work if it's, if they're portrayed well enough. I mean, if they're all noise and they still end up getting their ass handed to them every time they go out there, it'll probably go nowhere. But I guess we have to wait and see how it plays out. I'm more optimistic about these guys together than I am with them kind of wandering around aimlessly apart, that's for sure.
And again, Drew McIntyre's found his way to TV, so it can't be all bad. I like Drew, too. I don't like his look. I think he needs to change his look, but I like him. We both like Jinder Mahal when he debuted. He managed to make Great Khali interesting for a few minutes, and I'm not the biggest Slater fan. The guy can work, but I've never liked his character, never liked his act. I kind of keep hoping they would find something else for him to do and give him a better act, and maybe that's the beginning of this. So, I mean, they've got talent in those three guys. I'm hoping that they're going to take them seriously.
Did you see him dancing? Move he does, the honky-tonk knees, it looks like he's got, like, a shock collar on. Somebody keeps hitting the button or something. That's ridiculous. Like, I mean, that made me angry to the point where I actually get why he's a heel. Like, that, I mean, that more than anything made me angry about him. He just looks so stupid, but whatever.
For the first time, you actually wanted to boo the guy, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, oh, God, make this guy go away.
Oh, God, that's hilarious. I've seen the weird, I don't know what it is. You said the shock collar dance, we'll call it. Cole spoke briefly after commercial about his interview with Jerry Lawler that will happen on Monday. If you haven't, if you've been living under a rock for the past week, Jerry Lawler had a press conference this week on Wednesday. I got to cover it for the site. Other than a raspy voice, he looks great. If you didn't know what was going on and just happened to hear him on the press conference, you might think, oh, Jerry's got a cold. I mean, that's how good he looked. And probably this is the last week that we'll just kind of gush and go on and on about how wonderful and exciting it is that he turned out okay. But as a guy who spent time in emergency medicine, for him to have had a heart attack like he had and have to do CPR on him for somewhere between 15 and 20 minutes, various reports have, they're all syncing up to around that time, somewhere between 15 and 20 minutes. And for him to look that good 10 days later, 12 days later, whatever it was, just a fantastic moment and one so very exciting to be able to report and about. But as to that, and so we'll see how he looks on Monday. I can't wait to see how he does, and I'm sure he'll be back in the on the headset sooner rather than later. The doctors seem to think this was one of them things. They fixed the problems with his heart, and he could be back in a couple of weeks. It's certainly possible. Santino and Morella and Antonio Cesaro make their entrances for our sixth match of the night. We saw Santino defeat Cesaro in 1:45. The finish almost comes. You get Cesaro grabs the Cobra sock away from Santino, throws it over into the corner. Oksana hops up on the ring, reaches in between the top and middle ropes to get the Cobra. Cesaro ends up hitting the ropes. I can't remember if Santino pushed him or what, but Cesaro ends up hitting that same set of ropes, but on the opposite end. That makes Oksana fall in the ring, hurt her knee. He hits the pop-up uppercut on Santino and covers him, and he had him beat. You know, Santino lay there for 3, 4, 5 count, whatever, while the ref is checking on Oksana. Cesaro goes over and goes, "What are you doing? Get out of the ring, get out of the ring." She slides out of the ring. He takes a step back. Santino grabs him, rolls him up, pins him for the 1-2-3, does his big ridiculous celebration and leaves, at which point Cesaro, it was not a title match, Cesaro's still champion, but at which point Cesaro grabs the microphone and says, "I have something to say to you in 5 languages," and he goes through all the different languages and closes with English and says, "We're finished," storms off and leaving Oksana there crying, and her acting was terrible. She was not the least bit sympathetic in that situation. And so we can critique all that, but I'm a little bit pissed off, Jake. I like Oksana and Cesaro together. Why the hell would you break them up?
Yeah, I was kind of confused by it myself. I'm not against it necessarily. I think Cesaro would be fine on his own. You know, I'm not sure what the hell they do with Oksana by herself, unless they want to move her right back into the Divas division, which I don't know if that's a great idea since she struggled there. She's not great on the microphone. She just stumbles over words a lot, and she has a thick accent, which is difficult to understand her a lot of the time. And, she struggled in the ring as well. So, maybe they want to break Cesaro off and have him do something a little bit more serious as a character, you know, instead of relying on the same gimmicks with Oksana for distractions and victories all the time. If that's the case, that's fine. But it seemed like it was without warning, and you know, maybe there's more to this story that we just don't even know. But it sounds like what most concerned me the most was that we're going to see more, you know, Santino Cobra nonsense, surrounding this story. And you know, if Oksana is the lover seeking revenge, then that could make this even more ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'll wait and see, how it plays out before I panic. But just my initial reaction to it is, this is dumb. I mean, they had a good act together. Will he be fine without her? Yeah, I'm like you in that I think he'll be fine without her. But I was digging what they were doing together. I thought she added something to his act. I still don't think they've done a good job of telling us anything about Antonio Cesaro. I mean, I'll ask the question. He's a rugby player. And he speaks 5 languages. What else can you tell me about Cesaro? Sorry, don't tell me about Claudio Castagnoli. I want to know what else there is to know about Antonio Cesaro.
We know nothing yet, and that's kind of the problem. I mean, we don't know anything.
So he had at least a story there. He had something going on with Oksana, and now that's gone. And yes, there's a million things they can do with him, but I liked it. I liked what they were doing. And so for me as a fan, this is kind of frustrating to see, and especially if they go down what seems to be the obvious road, as you pointed out, which is her hooking up with Santino, since the Cobra loves Santino, or loves Oksana anyway, her hooking up with Santino, and now we get these two together, and her being the jilted lover, trying to get some sort of revenge. That idea really pisses me off. that idea just makes me mad on so many levels, because it's not going to be very good. After commercial, we get all the tag teams, the current tag team contenders, the Usos, the Primetime Players, and Kidd and Gabriel, Justin Gabriel and Tyson Kidd, in their horrible neon yellow shirts, standing at ringside. Cody Rhodes and Damian Sandow in the ring. Kane and Daniel Bryan make their entrance for our 7th match of the night, and it was Kane and Daniel Bryan defeating Damian Sandow and Cody Rhodes in about 7 minutes or so. I don't have a time on this one either, but roughly about 7 minutes seems right. By disqualification, the finish on this comes when Cody Rhodes gets in the ring and hits Kane with a chair to cause the DQ. Yeah, it was a pretty good match for that. We had some, bickering from Kane and Bryan and whatnot, just kind of their standard gimmick over the past few weeks as they've built through this tag title change. Bryan grabs a chair from Rhodes, and then Kane hits Rhodes with a big boot. Bryan starts to hit Rhodes with the chair, but then hands it to Kane, all smiles. Kane starts wailing on Rhodes. Bryan goes to the floor, gets the chair. Rhodes rolls away, leaving Sandow out in the ring, who had just taken a choke slam from Kane. That was when Cody hit Kane with the chair. That was after Kane had choke slammed Sandow. So both these guys have chairs in the ring, and while Damian Sandow might be well-liked by WWE, it looked like he had to earn some stripes tonight as they hit him about 600 times with these chairs. The after about the third or fourth one, they were doing a good job of making the camera bounce around, and you could tell they were hitting more matte than they were standout. But he took a couple of pretty good shots with those chairs before they settled in, and but they hit him a ton of times. The other tag teams kind of shrug their shoulders, go to leave. Kane rolls out of the ring, grabs them, starts beating them up, throws them in the ring. Then they end up killing everybody with chairs. Everybody takes chair shot after chair shot after chair shot. All good chair shots all across the flat of the back, no head shots, very good stuff there. They left everybody down in the ring. Bryan goes and gets the belts, hands one to Kane. They stand tall, hold the chairs, each of them holding a chair and a belt high in the air as Kane's pyro pops to end the show. But just before we go off the air, these two start arguing again about who is the tag team champions. I am the tag team champions. No, I am the tag team champions. You know, a good finish to what they were doing the whole show. I was very frustrated by the tag teams being at ringside. They weren't there as lumberjacks. They weren't off to the side. Like, if they were all around the announce table just watching and kind of scouting, that would have made sense. But it looked like they were there to be lumberjacks, and they didn't do anything. Then they just get dragged into the ring and beat up like schmucks. That was kind of annoying to me. I just don't, you know, I like to see a little bit of some logic, even if there's, you know, with wrestling, there's a certain amount of logic that you have to just kind of shrug your shoulders and accept. But give me a little bit, and so that was frustrating, but a fun way to end the show, and it was kind of ridiculous seeing them all laid out like that. I hope this leads, as we talked about earlier, to some of these guys being able to get some legitimate shots at the tag titles, instead of just being comedy fodder for Bryan and Kane completely from there. But what did you think about the ending of the show?
Well, I mean, you know, it was good comedy, and it, you know, it got a chuckle out of me, you know, the way the whole thing played out with the, you know, with Bryan handing Kane the chair, and, you know, them having, you know, a bonding moment or whatever you want to call it as a team, and, you know, uniting for, you know, what was it, about 2 minutes to destroy the rest of the tag division. So, I mean, the way the whole story played out throughout the night was fun. But, I mean, in order to get there, you know, they had to take a lot of shortcuts, which you mentioned. But, you know, it worked because of how charismatic Bryan and Kane were. You know, if that was two boring characters and they're doing the same thing, that would have been a total flop. But the way it was handled, you know, I enjoyed it and I got a good laugh out of it, and I think that was the point. So, you know, I don't want to overthink it too much, because if you look much past the surface, you'll see how ridiculous it was. But, you know, I had a good time and I laughed at it, so whatever.
Yeah, it's worth seeing. Don't get me wrong. It's worth seeing. It was like that. There were shortcuts. There were some big leaps of logic there that they had to use to get there. But it was, you know, for a SmackDown, so often when we get these holding pattern SmackDowns, they're just bleh from start to finish. And when it's over, it's like, okay, nothing sucked, but oh my God, I just wanted to go to sleep when it was over. Not the case this time. I thought the 2 hours went by very fast. We talked, you know, all the time about how you could tell how good a show is a lot of times by when we look up and go, oh, there's 30 minutes left. Oh, wow, that's the show's gone by fast. That's a good show where you look up and go, dear God, it's one quarter. I'll never make it to the next seven. And I thought this one was one of those ones that went by real fast. But last question before we get out of here, because you said something and it just rung. It was like a bell going off in my ear, because it just, did you ever think you would use the term, well, this depended on how charismatic Kane and Daniel Bryan were together. Did you ever think those words would come out of your mouth in that order?
No, I didn't. You know, and especially a couple of months ago when they were involved in that storyline with AJ, where, you know, it kind of got a little, you know, where Kane kind of felt like the third wheel the more and more it went on. But, you know, they've both been excellent. You know, and you can't discount how good Kane has been. You know, anytime he's been put into a comedy role in WWE, he's delivered. And, you know, you can look back at that and see that it's the case. I mean, he's generally a very funny and very smart guy. So I think he gets comedy, and that's why this works. And I think Bryan is the same way. They're both, you know, pretty intelligent people, and they understand timing and whatnot, and they both get it, and this is working. You know, how long it works depends on how good the writing is, and I guess we'll just have to see how it plays out.
As I said in .NET Weekly a few weeks ago, people always sleep on Kane, and he always comes out and entertains them time and time again. He's not been perfect through his career. I mean, you know, that the end of that last title run was really bad, but even on the front end of that, he was very good in a serious role. here in this comedic role, he has been just outstanding. And again, line of the night for him for looking at Edge and going, Edge, you seem angry, was just fantastic. If you're looking for a fun show, I think I would recommend sitting down and watching this show from start to finish. They tell a good story. Even if it doesn't do much, they tell a good story over the 2 hours. And that's not something we always get from WWE. But that's all the time we have this week. Jake and I will be back next week. I am missing coverage once again next weekend. Next Friday I will not be covering because I will be doing a live show. Pro Wrestling Evo comes to you live again on iPay-Per-View next Friday night. There will be more information on that on the site as the week goes along, which I'm sure some people will just love to hear. But Jake will have you covered next week, or somebody will, and he and I will get together on Saturday to talk about the show again. Until next time, everybody, remember, if you want to hear more audio, all the audio we produce each week here on .NET, you got to be a .NET member. Just head over to ProWrestling.net, click on that .NET member sign-up link, and get started today for just $7.50. Access to all those audios. Again, my interview with the Young Bucks is up, Ring of Honor champion Kevin Steen, Steve Corino, Mike Bennett, more coming. It's a great time to be a .NET member. We've got a lot of fun stuff going on. And as always, thank you, each and every one of you, for your support of the ProWrestling.net site. We really do appreciate it, and we appreciate it so much. We'll see you back here next week. Until then, everyone, have a fantastic weekend. Take care.